Welcome to episode 217 of Sports Geek. On this week's episode, I chat with Nissan Motorsports' Nick Ryan on building a team and developing fans in motorsport.
Welcome to Sports Geek, the podcast built for sports digital and sports business professionals. And now, here's your host who's ready to give his sports biz hot takes, Sean Callanan.
Thanks, DJ Joel. Yes, my name is Sean Callanan. I'm here for your sports biz hot takes. Thank you for listening. You may be doing so on sportsgeekhq.com, your favorite podcast app. Might be Pocket Casts. It might be Google. You might be listening on your Amazon Echo. Whatever you are listening on, thank you very much. As always, you can contact me. Send me an email, sean@sportsgeekhq.com, at Sean Callanan, or at Sports Geek on most channels. If you want to send me a message on LinkedIn, say you listen to the podcast. I love getting those messages. So thank you very much for your feedback so far. Before we get into this episode with Nick Ryan from Nissan Motorsport, I just want to talk a little bit about the athlete digital training we've been planning and talking to a few clubs about. And it's really something that's ideal for player groups or coaching groups, coaches wanting to understand the digital landscape and where their players are active. And it's something a little bit more, because what we find is a lot of players are wanting to better understand the platforms, both from a marketing and personal brand promotional point of view, but then there's also the scarier side of the privacy and those kind of things. So we've got a few different sessions. We've got a primary one, which is around a group training session, which helps them understand, hey guys, this is what all the platforms are clamoring for athletes. Here's what Facebook wants. Here's what Instagram wants. Here's what Twitter wants. Here's some of the opportunities, helping them understand what platform might work for them. And then giving them some ideas around what content might work for them from a player point of view, and also how they can work better with the club in the content they're producing. And then also go through a little bit of a few of the things around online privacy and security, both to protect themselves, but then also, you know, their loved ones and their people close to them. Take them through a few scenarios that they should try to avoid. And then also talk a little bit about, I guess, social media and mindset and game day, and making sure that they find the right place for where social and digital is, but also making sure that's not affecting them on game day. And then opportunities for them to grow that digital presence, to grow their digital cheer squad, if you will, and potentially bring in some sponsorship rewards for them. So if you're interested, as always, you can reach out, sean@sportsgeekhq.com, or go to sportsgeekhq.com/social media athlete training, all one word. Well, my guest this week is Nick Ryan. He is GM at Nissan Motorsport and a Sports Geek Nation member. So it's great to get Sports Geek Nation members on the podcast. So we talk about supercars, which, if for my US audience, it's similar to NASCAR, I guess, but with street circuit and a series around street circuit. So it's in that same sort of space. But Nick explains it better than me. As I say in the interview, I'm no rev head. Here is my conversation with Nick Ryan from Nissan Motorsport. Very happy to be here at Sports Geek at Creative Cubes. My guest today is General Manager of Nissan. I've got to get it right for the people in Australia. That's how we say it in Australia. Nissan. Motorsport. Nick Ryan, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
Yeah, so I nearly did win to the Nissan, which is what our US friends would say. So give us a little bit of background of Nissan Motorsport, where they fit, and I guess the landscape of the sport before we get into your background.
Yeah, for sure. So Nissan Motorsport, we are the factory team of Nissan in supercars, which is now was V8 Supercars, now just titled Supercars. So we are the biggest team in the category. We're a four-car operation. There's 26 cars on the grid. So we are a turnkey business. We do everything from initial design, development, production, operation of racing our four supercars. We're a sizable business in terms of, you know, a lot of people actually, to take that sideways, is a lot of people when they see us on TV and even sometimes at events, they just expect we're a side garage just down the street. And
Which is how the sport started.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, there's still that perception that exists after all these years, but really it's a much more sophisticated technological business now that, you know, we're a business up the road in Brayside that's 5,500 square meters, 19 separate departments, 60 full-time staff. From all those aspects that I mentioned before about helping us to go racing each and every weekend throughout the season. So, you know, we're a business going to our 10th year this year. We were a Holden-based team for a period of four years. The sport has gone through an enormous amount of change, and I'll reference some of those points today as we're chatting, but there was a program heading into 2013 called Car of the Future, which was really about evolving the sport. We had a period where it was a duopoly. It was Ford and Holden in competition for history. And, you know, going back a long time ago, there was other makes, but really for the modern day sport that we know, it was a Ford and Holden product. And this Car of the Future program was about future-proofing the sport and finding new avenues to entice and encourage new manufacturers to come in. And with that, that allowed these manufacturers that really were closed out, the opportunity to come in and compete against these existing makes was nigh impossible because the cost to do so would have just been prohibitive. And even competition would have been challenging. So this program allowed us, we were the first team to bring a new manufacturer in, which we did bring in Nissan with full global backing. In terms of global backing, we had strong support, but really we still delivered all the technical aspects and everything around our product to go racing. And we've had that continuation with Nissan. This is going to our sixth year. Look, unfortunately, at the end of this year, Nissan is stepping away from supercars, and there's a number of reasons for it. I won't bore you and all your listeners with all of those, but some fundamentals around the future of Nissan and needing to race their hero product GTR in all the markets that they do. And unfortunately, supercars as a platform is not a suitable platform for that product right now. So, you know, for us, we're a business that owns all the IP and everything that we race with what we've developed. So we'll continue with this product at least through next year as we take a view of what is the long-term future of the sport. And again, opportunities to encourage these new manufacturers. And there's a lot of change that's happening you know, there's obviously a lot of change in the general marketplace for motorsport and motoring. But you know, we're certainly at the forefront of that and looking at what the opportunities are for us next.
So supercars as a sport in Australia, because you know, there's this perception of the sports business that it's all the ball sports. And you know, if you look at the US, it's, you know, the big four or the big five, if you include MLS of the NBA, NHL, you know, NFL and MLB, and they're the sort of the sports. And then there's motorsport onto the, you know, to the side with, and it's a little bit the same in Australia. Where is supercars and motorsport positioned in Australia?
Yeah, it's a very interesting question. I think it's very misunderstood motorsport because it's not that traditional sport that people follow.
Yep.
And I'll speak about the challenges that brings, but the statistics don't lie. I mean, we're for our 16 events this year, we're the third most attended sport in the country. So where you relate all the other sports that we compete against, every game of AFL, any NRL, you're going cricket, A-League, whatever goes on and on and on. You know, the fact over just 16 events that we have the third most attendance collective for the season is quite enormous. Fourth most watched in terms of broadcast hours that exist around the sport. But you know, it is. It's just one of those sports that is, unfortunately, it's misunderstood, and that brings with the challenges. I mean, particularly when we're talking to a lot of commercial brands and you navigate your way through businesses, it's a non-traditional sport, and it's one that takes quite a bit of effort to explain and understand. But at the end of the day, there is some great statistics. It's a highly passionate audience. It's a very engaging sport. It's a highly accessible sport, yep, and provides so much offering. So we've got a history of getting these brands in and getting these fans in, and once we're there, we keep them.
Yep.
But you know, the recruitment and certainly for where the sport's heading in the future, that recruitment strategy is enormous. You know, it's around what is this fan of the future,
yep,
and I'm sure we'll get into that more today. But that's where the focus of that exists, because we've got this core audience and we've got a huge audience, and it is a national audience. We're one of the few national sports. We compete in every state in Australia. We, yep, compete in the Northern Territory. We go race over in New Zealand. We take the product to the people. We're in regional areas. We're in metro centres. They're amazing events. You sit there and we launch. Well, actually, we're in New Zealand's coming up for this weekend here, which, you know, over 100,000 people. We finish at Newcastle in 3 weeks' time. There's 195,000 went last year. We kick off round one next year, Adelaide, 300,000 people. These are big, yeah, events.
And it is that, you know, it's similar to, you know, having a talk to Zara earlier this year around the F1. Motorsport is that traveling circus and these major events dropping in every week, as opposed to, again, comparing to other sports of a week in, week out, or X many games at a one venue, and you know, it's hyper-local. You've got this, you know, national traveling tribe circus, you know, yeah, that people are, oh, well, here's the one time I can see it this year.
That's exactly right.
And,
yeah,
and it's a, you know, must attend for your fans.
That's right. And there lies some of the challenges that exist for the sport that you do have. You've got these highly passionate people, and the reality is, you know, you're only in their region maybe once a year. It's not like, you know, I'm a passionate Carlton fan, but you know, every
I feel for you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I can't believe I even brought that up.
Yeah, no, that's but, okay.
That's probably why I like motorsport so much. But for that is the reality for a, yeah, lot of these fans. It becomes a broadcast product. We deliver an exceptional event experience, but the package does exist a lot for the fans and broadcast, because we are racing around the country and we do have these amazing events. But you know, it's like any other sport. To travel to see the sport that you love is often expensive. So, yeah, you need to make sure that the broadcast experience is enormous. The other challenge we have is the fact that there is breaks in between each of our events. We endeavour to be on the calendar every 2 weeks, but there are further breaks that exist. So you're off the radar, and that's hard. To maintain that level of consistency and as a sport, and to stay relevant and in the media is challenging. You know, we're always trying as a sport and as teams to maintain that level of consistency without just punching out any old content for whatever, yeah, is the purpose for doing it. And you know, that can work in your favor or against you, you know, and some teams do an incredible job of it. And, you know, I'd like to think that we do a pretty good job of finding the right way to connect with our fans, and we have big audiences. You know, our social audience is quite extraordinary, but you know, they're the existing challenges that are for our sport, and finding ways that we can really fill those gaps for the fans, so they remain engaged with us for the season, and then also finding that new fan. You know, what's going to get them there? Because a lot of the time, once we get people to, and the statistics show, once we get people to events,
yep,
it's a real breaker for them.
Lock them in real life. Like, this is what you've seen on TV, but it's larger and louder, and the total experience that really locks them in.
And there's certainly, it's you know, for a lot of people, you know, they may ask what sport, what industry or something we're in, and you know, the typical answer is motor racing or anything. It's entertainment.
Yeah,
that's what it is. You know, sport is entertainment, and unless we're relevant and exciting, and there's color and everything else, the noise that exists at motorsport, then you lose that. And you know, the entertainment product we have is exceptional. You know, I Formula One is one that we talk about a lot. You know, Formula One is such a technical business, an amazing business in many respects, but I think they took their eyes off it. You know, they changed the noise factor, which you can go to the Grand Prix here at Melbourne. We're a key part of that event, and you can sit or you can stand next to the person and have a conversation you know, part of the excitement and thrill of going to that sport was the fact that my ears were bleeding when I walked out of the joint. So
I mean, I live just down the road from here in Richmond, and I used to be able to hear practice and the sessions from here, a couple of kilometres away, and yet the last couple of years, not so much.
No.
So I want to wind things back a little bit and find out how you got into sport and how you got into motorsport.
Yeah, for sure. It's for me, my career was looking likely to go a different direction. I originally was studying architecture of all things. It was something that I loved when I was growing up, and I'm not sure that my ambitions there were matched by the talent, and I realized in the piece that this probably wasn't for me a couple of years into my study, and then thinking about really what I wanted to do, and all my life I'm like sports mad, you know, everything. It doesn't matter whether it's local sport, doesn't matter what version of sport it is. You know, I think that's similar for a lot of Melburnians, where you know, we'll go and watch a ball run around the MCG at any point in time. But for me, the diversion then to marketing, and it was always the end goal for me was sport. I was, you know, sport is often a difficult business to crack in the first instance, but once you're in there and you really dedicate yourself to it, which I did, you know, the doors open up, and for me, I got a bit of a lucky intro to it with a sports marketing company, and then moved on to another one that had involvement with a whole host of sports, a boutique sports marketing agency here, and we were involved in a lot of the strategy play for brands investing in sport, and also supporting you know, rights holders as such around what their strategies were, and helping secure commercial sales and the likes within sports. I had exposure to some AFL, NRL. You know, we were the platform rights to the NRL, looking after all their commercial rights. And then that went on to swimming, to cricket, and, you know, I had some terrific exposure. But in that business that I was for a number of years, they owned a share of a supercar team, V8 supercar team at the time.
Yep.
And for me, I had no interest in motorsport really growing up. You know, I'd just as a general level, I'd have a look at F1 and you know, that was exciting. But for me, for supercars, you know, there was no one in my family that was passionate about it. And that's where you find a lot of these people are. You know, I watched with dad, or I sat on the couch, or I went to an event.
Generational
rev heads. And that is not my family. They don't, they do not have a mechanical bone in their within. But once I got exposure to that sport, and it's like anything. Once you really see behind the scenes, you understand how the sport functions. See within the inner sanctum of this. It really excited me.
I think it's, you know, it's interesting coming, because there's great. It's great coming to a sport as a fan of the sport, and you have that fan point of view.
Yep.
But then if you come, like when you come to a sport, like, you know, if I work with different sports, and I'm not a true passionate fan about all the sports I work with, it gives you a little bit of a cleaner view of it, and a little bit dispassionate, so you can sort of analyze the fans a little bit, see what why they're passionate about things, without the color of I love this, I whether it's nostalgia and you have rose colored glasses of this is how it used to be done and we should do this. Do you think that gave you a little bit of, I guess, you know, clarity in looking at motorsport coming into it from that angle?
I think so. You know, like I mentioned before, you know, the perception of the sport that we sit in a garage and just roll out a car that, you know, was on the lot a week earlier, it was misunderstood for me. And seeing that and the competition side of the sport and the challenges that exist, I mean, for this sport I always say in this sport, when you win, you win. Like you really win. It, from all the factors of the technological development in your product to get to the track, from all the aspects of understanding that circuit and setting up your vehicle, when we set up our cars in a race weekend, I think it's in analysis from the technical guys, something like 32 million different combinations of setup you can have in a vehicle to apply that car to get it settled for whatever is the circuit. And circuits change from year to year from where they are. Then you've got the drivers on any given weekend, so the performance they're sitting there. Then you're talking about the assembly, so the finger work. It can be a $2 part. We've got a $600,000 race car. We've got four of them. But a $2 part, a valve or something can blow, kill your weekend. Yeah. Then at the end of the day, if you get everything right, everything's going exceptionally well, and someone drives into you, that's so far out of your control. Or a pit stop goes wrong, a gun fails, or all these kind of things that implicate. And that competition side of it just really excited me. But then also the business behind it, you know. And that's my role within that. You know, I run the entire business of what is Nissan Motorsport.
Yeah, so dive into the role as general manager. I guess everything's under your remit, but you know, what does the team look like? Because again, like I look at it from a traditional, you know, sports point of view, and effectively you're in the role running the team, but there's, you know, performance and the technical side and the people running the cars, and then there's, you know, the back office, you know, bringing in the money and sponsorship and keeping it ticking over. How does it work for you?
Yeah. So in our business, and I mentioned for 60 odd full-time staff, there is certainly a heavy weighting towards technical people in the business. Now, my role is across the entire business, but as it comes back to foundation of understanding, I'm not a technical person. So, you know, you have layers of people in there. We're not, you know, a highly vertical business, but we certainly have layers of people that have greater technical understanding, or much greater, thank God. Otherwise, we'd be a pretty poor race team.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I deal with those people on a, I guess, on a people level.
Yeah.
So on a performance level. So it's very important. We do an extraordinary amount of work on performance, analyzing performance. You know, the transition, and you know, I won't take another hour of this, but of how we go about it. But you know, in that transition of high performance to high performing, you know, and there's so much in that, and we work incredibly hard. But I guess from a day to day area, my apart from the general business, I sit across all the commercial aspects of our operation, which encompasses sales, encompasses service, membership team, digital, PR, membership, content.
Yep.
So that's really where I sit, and I run all the commercial sales part of our business. I do all the commercial, you know, the millions and millions of dollars that we require to go racing. And frustratingly, in this game, the technical people spend it way faster than I can bring it in.
Yep.
Which is an ever going challenge. But it's never a dull moment. And you know, we'll say it probably in sport, but no 2 days are the same. And that's absolutely true. You know, it's a heavy travel business as well. You know, I'd be on the road 4 months a year in the sheer volume of racing that we do throughout the season.
And so how has, over your time, you know, if people are looking at motorsport, it was one of the first sports that, you know, found every single space, you know, the drivers and the patches everywhere, and there's logos on cars. How much has the business evolved from, you know, a lot of motor racing products? They're like, hey, we want to sell more of our whatever they are. We need to be associated with this team, to that broader base, because you're moving from I'm watching because I want to hot up my car type fan to I'm watching because I'm following it as a sport and it's becoming accessible. How is that model, I guess, shifted in your time from motor racing, which is the motor racing market, which is still obviously super important, but that wider piece of, oh, motor racing can help me access families and young adults and those kind of things.
Yeah, definitely. And that's you're exactly right. And I think the sport's done a very good job on marketing itself a lot differently. And the statistics say it's approximately 80% of people that attend an event are there with one other family member. And the perception that we are purely male dominated arena that working through the door and you know, that probably to some degree was right in time, and therefore the brands that were attached to that, you know, there was probably a determination that, you know, we were largely supported by garage brands. So garage brands are those traditional brands that are associated with our sport. But you know, the sport has found that avenue to really broaden and tell the story a lot better, and with that attract these brands outside of, you know, within our team, you know, such as the likes of Harvey Norman that is a platform sponsor, you know, along with LGs in that association. So and we've had the ability of the sport to do that over a long period of time. You even look like a Vodafone as an example, you know. Vodafone, when they made all their changes because of their network issues, you know, they had exited AFL and all other sports before they had exited motorsport, and you know, it made a lot of sense for their business and their brand. And now they're back.
Yep.
You know, they're back in a big way. They're you know, naming rights to one of our events. You know, the title sponsor of our category is Virgin Australia.
Yeah.
You know, they obviously have a big play in the ball sports, but you know, there's a high level appeal and very strong and very broad and very engaged audience across our sport.
And so, in the again, in the parallels from a pro sport point of view, You know, there's very much the fans seem to be not seem to be they are they're moving towards following like the athlete first, and we're seeing that definitely in, you know, leagues like the NBA and in football generally globally, with player movements, and you know, so there's they're following the player, you know, guys like LeBron and Ronaldo and wherever they end up, then they follow the team and they have that passion for the team, and it's sort of the league slash sport is sort of the third in line. How does that fit in supercars and with your team? Do you have that tribal nature of, you know, it's obviously going to be a challenge as you're making changes in 2019, that I'm following Cali Racing or Nissan Motorsport, sure, and then are the drivers becoming the rock stars? Are you seeing similar trends in motorsport?
Yeah, I think in history, it used to be the other way around because of that tribal nature of Ford and Holden. It was, you know, you're a Ford person or you're a Holden person.
Yeah.
You sit there and you wear that apparel or that color of red or blue as a badge of honor.
Yep.
And you sit there with your mates and you argue till you're blue in the face about why you dislike him because he's wearing a blue shirt, vice versa. And that was the sport. There's been great drivers over time, the Craig Lowndes of the world who made manufacturer shifts over time.
Yep.
And you know, people had public burnings of apparel, and you know, his name was mud and it's gone. You know, how could that ever take place? But you know, the sport in general, like a lot of sports, you know, that change has happened and that change has come, and these athletes are you know, it's really primary in that, and then the team, and then there you go, the manufacturer. I mean, and that in our sport is largely around the opportunities with these new manufacturers as well, because and really that's an aging demographic, I think, that is primarily attached to these cars. I'd always tell a story that you used to go to a Bathurst car park 10 years ago and it was Ford and Holden heaven. That's all you drove. If you didn't bring a Ford or a Holden, get a bus in because your car would probably be rolled out of there. But these days it's every manufacturer under the sun, and this new backfield, this new audience that we have, they're not Ford and Holden people. Yep. And really it's about now with what social media as an example can give, and we can tell the story of these athletes, and that's a big step, I think, still for the sport that needs to evolve. We've got this fine line, I think, with our athletes at the moment where they're controlled by the category in terms of what they're allowed to do, what they're allowed to say. Now certainly they can present their own story, but you know, even in broadcast, you know, we're never going to get to UFC.
Yeah.
Nor would that be a good thing for our sport.
Yeah.
But there's probably a level of shackles that needs to be removed to help broaden our sport. It's going to attract more media. I mean, at the end of the day, when someone drives into you out on the racetrack, you're pretty filthy about it.
Yeah.
So allow people to tell that story. You know, that it's not violence, but it's also, you know, NASCAR's a bit different. NASCAR, they're allowed all in brawls and that, you know, that resonates, that gets global news. And, you know, they've got their place there with that. And I don't believe that's right for our sport, but I still think there's a lot further that we can go with it and really amplify who are our athletes, who are our individuals. You know, our sport, Craig Lowndes, who I mentioned before, he's retiring at the end of this year, and he's such a figurehead, I guess, in terms of ambassador for our sport and for the future, and he will stay in a media perspective, but we really need to continue to tell the stories of these new athletes and people coming through. You know, we've got some great athletes in our team.
Yeah. So how do you balance? Because I think, you know, being in Melbourne as we are, and seeing how the market operates here, there's a little bit of, oh, we should be doing what works really well. And the AFL is a, you know, market leader, and I think a worldwide leader in the membership space and the way they go about it. And, you know, cricket's gone down the same path with Big Bash and this franchise model and memberships. How much do you look to, I guess, follow or, you know, steal with pride, if you will, the best of what's happening in the Australian sports scene or internationally, but then also balancing that with what's unique at your unique proposition?
Yeah.
How do you balance that as a team?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. Even as a sport, there's a big shift in that, because even our racing product has been so traditional, I think. And you've got to be so careful, because you end up just preaching to the converted.
Yeah.
you know, you sit there and they watch and go, how could you change that format of the racing? That's what I've watched for 20 years. It's like, okay, great. Well, are we getting that new audience? Are they interested in that and doing that? And I think the sport is being forward thinking in look, you look at what's happened with Big Bash. You look how successful that's been. You know, we started night racing this year.
Yep.
And we had an incredible product in Sydney Motorsport Park where, you know, racing under lights and let me tell you, it's not easy to light a racetrack with temporary lighting over the, you know, a 4 kilometer circuit or whatever you have. So
it's not cheap either.
Not cheap. And thank God it didn't rain. Otherwise it would have probably not been the product we all wanted.
Yeah.
You know, we were pretty lucky on the night, but that's around where the sport is changing enormously. And this is my thing. You know, I talk to a lot of people in and around the sport, and a lot of these people are traditionalists and things as well. You throw that out. At the end of the day, you got to have these groups of people that are talking about what is the future. If at the end of the day, people want us to race at nighttime, and that's going to bring us X amount of people to the sport in the future, and we do that every time, well, so be it.
Yeah.
That's the product we need to present. Again, we're back to an entertainment product. So as a team within that, you know, it's a balance, you know, because we're a big team that's been established in this sport for a long period of time, but you've got to put faith in the category and where they're heading.
Yep.
And you've got to support the decisions that are being made for the long-term security of what we race. You know, there's a lot at stake in teams. There's a lot that we own. You know, it's not a members-owned sport. These are privately owned teams. And,
yep.
And there's millions. You know, we'd have $25 million tied up in our facility. It's probably the best facility in Australia in terms of motorsport and would be on a global stage. So, you know, we need to trust in the process with the sport, because if it flips on us, we're in a bit of trouble.
Yeah. So where does you know, because when you talk about a team and tribes, and you know, it does lead to that membership product. Mm. How does the membership product work in your space? Because it's not the same as the, you know, the AFL, where, you know, you're going to turn up every week or every second week or whatever it is, because they might only attend once potentially. So how do you bring people into your tribe and sort of follow that, you know, building up your database, putting them on the escalator of what they can be? What does the membership product look like for you guys?
I mean, it dreams to be made of if we can find the Richmond model of 100,000 fans in our membership.
But
it's a challenge for us because we don't control the events. We don't run those events. So when you sit there as a you know, I mentioned them again as Carlton, I'm a member. You know, the advantage I have is for being a member is access to games, access to finals.
Yep.
So in our sport, we don't have that luxury. We can't provide ticketing to events. We can provide a high level of accessibility, which is what our sport is known for. But at the end of the day, it's a model that needs to be altered. And really, our sport in a membership model was quite traditional. For whatever reason, you know, the established traditional way of doing a membership program was, you know, $100 or whatever it might be.
Yep.
And you get a few benefits. You know, you might get some merchandise, and you know, teams may savvy it up and get some branding or different bits.
But it doesn't have the historical piece, which is the AFL and, you know, the NRL's advantage was, oh, this is how you support your team. This is how it keeps it viable.
Yep.
You know, when...
No, that's right.
Yeah, and when people are looking at, you know, your team and going, well, they can see the money flowing through from the man. Like, you know, what's the benefit piece?
Yeah. Well, the real thing there, exactly right, as the fact that we can't give those event tickets and what it came down to was a host of benefits that used to exist across all the teams where effectively, again, you're preaching to the converted.
Yeah.
You're already passionate fans. You need to use your membership as a model to encourage people to learn more, understand more, get attached to your social channels, learn more about your business and become more passionate in what you do. And what was happening was for all teams, I believe, you know, we're really embracing those people that already love you.
Yep.
And don't get me wrong, that's great. You want to continue doing that, but at the same time, you're not really driving yourself into new markets. So we changed the model, I think, in a lot in supercars, and a lot of teams have done so. You know, for one, you cut the price out. It's just a really simple, and in a lot of respects, there's, you know, a free membership model, which is it's a data play for us.
Yep.
It's an opportunity for us to start the conversation, which is so critically important. And when people do come to events, we give them an experience like no other, a level of accessibility like no other. And what I mean by that is when you are are a ball sport, you know, as a passionate Carlton fan, you know, that my ability to go and engage with that team at a game is so limited. Yep. You know, I see them run out through the race, I see them go back. Supercars is different. You have the ability to come within the inner sanctum, touch and feel the products. The drivers are out there signing. You can come out on the grid before the race, which is literally like standing next to the players on the ground before the game goes. Now, that's not everyone gets that, but a lot of people do get that opportunity. So we convey that in a different model, and we bought this program out from America. It's always about what's new, what's innovative, what's different from not just our sport in bringing that innovation, but what's new to this market. And and we had this program FanMaker, which was all about rewarding fans for their support and communication with the team. So as they shared our content and put stuff out there, we're getting points, and we're putting promotions up there that they were, you know, like a frequent flyer program.
Yep.
And that just changed the conversation for us. That just allowed us to get mass audience in, big database play.
Yep.
You know, we have this huge, again, this huge social footprint, which is almost, you know, as an example, 700,000 on our Facebook channel, which you know, people can't believe when we talk about that, when they don't know much about motorsport. But this allowed us to have a different conversation with people, and that worked extremely well for us. And you know, whilst we're never going to get to the 100,000 member mark, unless we're doing it all free, it still provides a good base and a new platform which we work from.
But it is about, I guess, framing it in the same way that it has happened in, you know, professional sports, that it becomes an identity piece. You know, that, you know, I'm a Collingwood person, or you're a Carlton person. To have someone say, oh, this, you know, socially I'm putting my hand up and I can see that I'm a strong follower, I'm a supporter of Nissan Motorsport. And so it starts, you know, starts going back to almost that Ford Holden thing to say, oh, yeah, I'm backing the team.
Definitely.
You know, and rallying behind whatever drive you put in the car.
Yep.
And that illogical, we'll do well this year. That sports fans, once they have locked it into their identity, you know, that part of their identity, it's key.
Definitely. And I think for us, you've got to make that conversation beyond just, you know, because you love that, you must love cars. You must be a mechanic. You must have your own car in your garage that you tinker with. You've got to find so many different levels that you can invoke that passion from people. And, you know, we work pretty hard at that, you know, with the brands of our drivers, with I guess the tone of the team and how we communicate with people, how we engage with people at events to make sure they have that passion. And, you know, God bless the supercar fans. You know, they do walk around in public with their apparel on here, there and everywhere and love to tell the story. But, you know, that is one segment of our audience. And, you know, we work pretty hard on finding what are the other ways that we can find that. We can say people that will happily and promote our business and say they are a passionate fan.
So one of the things that keeps sports administrators awake at night is, where's our next fans? Like, these guys love us, or this group loves us, but, you know, what does the, you know, the 8-year-old, what are they going to be watching in 20 years? What does the 14, 15, 16-year-old, are they going to be engaged in 5 years' time? So, and, you know, so it's in this fan development. You've sort of spoken about this future of the fan thing previously. Does it keep you up at night? And what do you do to sort of mitigate that?
Yeah, big time. That's and the reality of our sport is, you know, the primary fan is sort of that 25, 30 mark up to 55 is that core segment that you have there.
Yep.
Where we need to really drive that message home is in the youth market. You know, it's not just about 18-year-olds, it's not 16-year-olds, it is this fan of the future. And it's not just about the dad that's still coming and bringing his young kids along.
Yep.
How do we excite them?
Yeah.
How do we make this product relevant for them when there is so much color and noise? You know, there is so much sport in Australia. There's so much to get to.
And there's so much people pitching, you know, at them, either as a participation point of view, whether it's, oh, you can do, you know, you can do a cricket program or a football program or an AFL or NRL. And so they're trying to, one, develop them as a potentially as a player. They've got that twofold thing, and as a fan, it's tough because you can't say, "Hey, little Jimmy, hop in the car, do a hot lap."
That's right. Does dad have $1 million to go racing? And that's from a couple of points there. Participation is challenging in our sport. because it is expensive. And, you know, the realities of this sport is, you know, you follow the pathway. If you were wanting to be a driver, is, you know, typical, a go-kart. Yep. Now, a top-level go-kart team is spending $100,000 a year.
Yep.
You go to a Formula Ford product after that, you're spending $200,000 a year. You go to a development series product, which is our feeder series, or a Porsche product, you're spending $400,000-$500,000 a year. Then if you're trying to get into, as a young kid going to main series, it can cost you $1 million a year to get your seat. Now, this is... this happens everywhere in motorsport around the world. It's a very expensive sport to go and compete. So the fact of participation for us is a challenge. You know, we don't have you know, the ability to go to the oval and get out there and you kick around with your kids and you know they feel the leather and have that first go at it. So the programs such as esports is a real opportunity for us. And the sport is starting to have a serious crack in that space. There's a lot of opportunity for us because it is a sport that is relevant. You know, you can go that virtual to reality route. I'll touch on that a little more in a second. But you know, it's different from, you know, if people play a FIFA or whatever, or NBA on their games, they're not suddenly going to go play in the NBA and that's not going to work. Or, you know, in the other forms of esports, Counter-Strike or League of Legends or whatever exists there, you know, there's no relative aspect to that, where motorsport is really different. And motorsport games are enormous in Australia. They're enormous globally. And
they're effectively training you potentially to get into a car.
And it's been proven. I mean, we've done this. So there is a program globally called GT Academy. Now, GT Academy is a formulation of a relationship between Nissan and PlayStation. It was created by Nissan, a guy called Darren Cox in Europe, who used to be the global head of motorsport for Nissan. And that was about showing that it's possible. There is this transition. And this program... and to give you an example, we ran for a number of years. We ran that whole program on behalf of Nissan and PlayStation. There's online components to it, and you know it's GT4. It's the game that you can go and buy for $80, $90. You play in your bedroom, you do whatever. Yeah, you can use your hand controller. You can have your simulator at home. It's all applicable.
Yeah,
and for what happened with that sport, we had Australia was attached to this global competition, and finalists went to the UK, where you step out of the simulator and you get in real road cars. And at the end of the day, this was 2 years ago, an Australian guy called Matt Simmons won the global competition. This guy was an Australia Post employee. He was literally a postie driving around delivering mail. He probably just did it a little more quickly than his fans, so he had a good job at Australia Post. I'm sure they'll sad to see him go. But he became a global Nissan driver. He went from the previous year sitting in his bedroom playing his games. I think his girlfriend had the shits with him and was sick of how much he was doing. But he said, I bet you, he said, one day, darling, I'm going to get somewhere. And he did. He became a global Nissan driver, drove in the Blancpain series overseas, racing at Le Mans, some of the biggest racetracks in the world. And it's genuine. You know, these people that are playing these games, the quality of the games that's there, it really resonates. And now the sport is having a big play in this space. It had a dabble last year where it launched an esports a final that took place at Bathurst at our signature event and got some gamers along, and really was just a chance for people to sample the product. This year they've had a much bigger play in the space. It's predominantly online. There was an event activation that took place at Bathurst, but now it's an opportunity to really engage this audience. It takes the product into their home.
Yeah,
and the tracks are the same. The cars look the same. The color, the excitement, and it's starting to merge those worlds really closely.
Yeah.
A lot of relevance in what they're doing, and for us as a team, we need to consider how we play that. And right now, we're in that space of, you know, are we having a representative? You know, like many EPL teams. Yeah,
it's sort of similar to, because there's obviously really strong crossover between playing the game and watching and being a fan. It's very similar to, you know, the NBA, NBA 2K, and how the NBA teams are getting into esports via that method. Is that's the sort of the next logical step for you to have, you know, here's our four drivers that are driving the physical cars, and you know, here's a couple of, you know, esport athletes that are driving us in the league as such online.
100%. And I think, you know, you look at the AFL teams, you know, there's a couple that are investing in big esports teams that they've got nothing to do with football.
Yeah,
You know, your Essendons and
Adelaide,
that are there. And I'm sure there's relevance. There's a mass audience that allows them to talk to. For us, we're talking directly to an audience.
It's an audience extension piece in your world. Whereas, you know, for the Bombers and Adelaide sort of getting into the League of Legends, it's an additional audience. There doesn't have to be crossover.
Yeah.
It's an attractive audience and some sponsor opportunities in that space, but it's not, you know, ability to, you know, talk to another fan segment, so to speak.
Definitely. And the opportunities that exist for us there is, you know, the play is probably, say, an individual first. You know, there's a lot of excitement around that, I think, from the fans, but media around what that means. And the opportunity is we can put these people in our cars.
Yeah.
You know, that you need a bit of training, you need a bit of work, or you can put them in a high performance road vehicle or something and you start the journey and you're giving people this, you know, it's genuine.
Yeah.
You're giving people this genuine connection around their enjoyment, their love, their passion, their fun. They race their mates, but hey, guess what? You can actually be a global driver, and we start on that journey. We support you. We take them through, and it just gives us a new channel as a team to start talking to a completely new audience for us. And, you know, that transcends manufacturer. That's anything. That's just the people that are playing online. They're not attached to driving a Holden, Nissan, Ford supercar.
And it is a new audience because they're gamers that are playing a game that happens to be your sport.
Yep.
What's been the reception of, you know, I guess the rusted on rev heads that are like, they've been following the sport forever and go, this isn't the real stuff. Like, you know, which is, what's this stuff, internet, which is a normal response. What's been the response from those fans initially? Because that's not what the product's for, but you've also got to cater to and help them understand that's what you're doing.
Yeah. I think they're encouraged by it. They see the relevance of what it is. They understand for the future of the sport, these things need to occur. Do they understand it all? Not necessarily. I don't think, but I think they certainly see the value. We have no doubt helped supercars in their transition to esports with the GT Academy program because it's the story already told. We've shown that this and you know was well covered globally about a guy that was delivering mail was now a global Nissan factory driver.
Yeah.
And you know it's not just pie in the sky. It's not just, you know, this guy is going to be a champion. It's been done and it's been delivered numerous times. There's a guy overseas, Jan Martinborough, who. Same story. He was an English kid who now is was once playing in his bedroom, and now he's on the Red Bull F1 feeder program.
Yep.
So that's beyond Nissan now, just in terms of where they've been able to nurture him as an athlete and help him and support him on his journey. He's on the F1 program. I mean, that's crazy. You know, these games are at that level that it's genuine.
Yeah, yeah. And the thing is, you know, talking about before that getting the attention of, you know, the consistency and the content play between races, it fits in really nicely in that space to be able to say, you know, there's not as much setup to say, hey, we're going to run a race or these kind of things. And you know, once the scheduling sort of smooths out, those motor racing fans that they would love 47 races a year, right? Logistically, a nightmare, right? But that's the spot where esports can fill that space and fill those gaps. And it's like, you know, it helps fill out the calendar.
And the other thing that supports it too is drivers off their own bat are entering themselves.
Yeah.
You know, you're racing against the supercar drivers of the world. And, you know, they do it from a fun perspective. Mm-hmm.
They're very competitive though. They don't like to lose.
They don't like to lose, but it's also, you know, how cool is that? The guy that you can see and you respect and you love in terms of the athlete, you can be racing door to door with that person as you go through, you know, each segment of the esports series. What an asset for us as a sport. And you're right. That helps us fill the gap. You know, a lot of people, you're watching the racing like as if you're watching a race weekend.
Before we wrap up, what are your big plans to finish up this year? But what are your big plans for, say, 2019?
Yeah, for us as a product, you know, we need to reestablish ourselves with the exit of Nissan. Where it's the Kelly Racing brand is underlying is what you know we were originally raced of as a, or raced under the title as a team. We need to re-cement that brand in the market. It's a consideration around a manufacturer for us in the future. What is that? And the technical rules that, that help support that. That's a big play for us. You know, there's a huge play for us in. With our partnerships at the moment, and just helping to really complete that circle and tie our associations into the sales funnel a lot more. We're doing an enormous amount in that lead nurture space now.
Yep.
About generating big database, working with a local business here in Victoria Green Room who work across a number of national sports about how we can create effective promotions that generate mass database that give us a leverage point to continue a conversation, nurture them towards purchase decisions, and you know, with the scrutiny across ROI for brands these days, you've got to complete that, and that's a huge play for us right now, and it's very effective. It's working extremely well. We find this relevance across a vast number of brands. We're doing from LG TVs to insurance for Steadfast, one of our major partners at the moment, and they're working extremely well, but allows us also to get our brand into new markets. You know, for that segment of insurance where, you know, we're getting databases in excess of 15,000 around these sort of 8 to 10 week promotions, and just allows us to continue the story of what we do.
Yeah, definitely. Getting to the Sports Geek closing five, Nick Ryan. I've been starting to remember to say people's names more often because I've been hearing people say, oh, yeah, I really like that podcast with that guy from so-and-so. I'm like, so this is Nick. Closing five. Do you remember the first sports event you ever attended?
I think for me, the first one I remember was it would have been a Carlton game when I was a kid. One of my best mates at school, his dad was on the committee of Carlton and yep. used to take us to the post-game yep. celebrations and functions. The only reason I really remember it is I was that wily little kid with an autograph book walking along the lines, and a guy called Adrian Gleeson
yep.
that was there, he stopped me when I was getting the autograph and he said, do you know who I am?
Yep.
And I just looked there, deer in the headlights, yep. and that never left me. Yeah. I sat there going...
So when's that? This is like late 80s, early 90s?
Yeah, correct. So I was there just in awe of all these athletes and yep. standing around, and that's my first memory of sport, and somehow I still got connected to Carlton and never left after that period of time, but that was probably daunting for me at that point.
Well, it must be some – in that time at least, there could have been a chance. I was actually in one of the little ticket boxes at Princes Park because one of my uncles works there in the finance space. And yeah, that was one of the gigs I did during uni years of, and you know, just to give the context, I think it was $12.50 for an adult and $2.50 for a kid under five for a kid under fives was free. Like that's, you know, just from a context of what the pricing was, but it was all cash. You know, it was all people were handing over cash and giving them the change and giving them an actual paper ticket that got snibbed back at Princes Park back in the day. You would have been to a few sports events and as we said earlier, the supercars keep upping the game of the event. Do you have a favorite, either a food memory or a go-to food?
Look, not probably not so much around. Look, Supercars does do a very good job in that space, and you know, making sure that it's a great offering for the fans. I'm probably a little bit different at sporting events. We take all our own chefs and everyone with us, so I get a bit of luxury on that side of things for meals. For me, when I go, my thing that I always go to when I go to AFL games, I go to the MCG. I'm a member there. And I walk up, as soon as I walk in, I walk up the first escalator, go to the Percy Beans bar. Tucked in the corner is this roast roll.
Yep.
And you get roast roll, gravy, cider chips, and coleslaw. And I sit there, I put my headphones in, and
you're good.
Leave me alone.
Yep. Terrific. What's the first app you open in the morning?
For me, it's always news as a snapshot, but then it's also sport, our sport. So across supercar racing, and I do that from the reason of knowing.
So you're opening the supercars app?
Yeah, correct.
Yep.
So it's just about and another one called Speed Cafe in our sport. Just making sure I'm aware of any surprises that might come up in the morning. You know, there's some pretty savvy media people around our sport. So I've just make sure, as well as general news, I've got a very good read before I get near the office about what's maybe happened overnight that may be relevant to us.
And is there someone that you would suggest the podcast listeners should follow and why?
There's probably a couple of people on Twitter that I I'd like to follow. Yep. One of those is Rob Mills from Gemba.
Yep.
Rob, just with his ongoing stats relating to sports and insights that he provides.
Rob Millsy or...
Yeah,
I think that's his
Rob
Twitter,
Wilson, Twitter handle. Like that.
Yep.
You know, he's really interesting and gives, you know, really great insights. Another guy I like to follow is his name is Chris Smith. He's an esports guy. He founded the Australian Esports Association, Business of Games. He handles something like Chris Mayo.
It's Chris Mayo. Yeah, I actually caught up with him at the EGAA conference just last week.
Yeah, he's possibly the most passionate person about esports. Don't prompt him on anything but esports because he won't talk to you about it. But just his insights to the esports market, which, you know, is broader than just what we do, but it is just across the whole landscape and Australia as that evolves. You know, for anyone that's excited by esports or interested in it, he's a very good starting point.
Yeah, definitely. He's got a podcast, Business in Games, where he's regularly chatting with people as well. What social media platform is your MVP? And so you've got the opportunity to answer that as yourself, Nick.
Sure.
And also, from the team point of view, what's the platform that's working the best for the team?
I'll start there. For team, it's Facebook for us. That has been hugely successful. As I mentioned before, you know, almost 700,000 followers on that platform. But, you know, followers means not a great deal. It's all about the engagement rates, and that's the ideal platform for us to get our message across and the content that we deliver. For me personally, it sits between Instagram and Twitter. I think I'm covering all the primary ones here.
Yep.
It depends what I'm doing. You know, Instagram's a bit of fun, and it allows me to catch up with all my American sport from overnight when I get up in the morning, just to see.
How has Supercars sort of, because we're seeing stacks of engagement in the story space on Insta. Mm. Are you seeing the same, you know, behind the scenes access, sharing more and more and deeper engagement and just crazy numbers comparatively?
Correct. That's exactly right. Yeah. And, you know, it much relays to my consumption. You know, I sit there and if you went through my Instagram and looked at the amount of athletes I follow now, just around those incredible insights. You know, I love watching Ben Simmons and the way he goes about things, or you know, you can go through a number of sports that you do it in and you feel like you know these people. You know, I'm a huge UFC fan, and you see the stuff that's out in there and the fighting and everything going on, but understanding the personalities and the people behind it, and that's very much the same for our sport, you know, conveying the personalities, who these people are and what the message is. So in Instagram for me, that's what I love, but then Twitter also has its place. Like, I'll go to Trade Week that was going on. You know, Twitter was up a lot for me. You know, vying for Dylan Shield to get to Carlton.
It's grand final week for Carlton. Carlton fans.
That's what I say to all my co-Carlton fans. You know, this is our time of year. We almost don't want to play. This is the period of the year that we can get most excited by, because who have we bought in and what's the potential? And right now we'd rather just play in the potential space.
Yeah. So where can people follow you? What are your handles and what's the best platform?
Yeah, the most for me and where I would be active would be in the Twitter space, which I think is Nick Ryan O, just an O on the end of Nick Ryan. That's probably where you'll see any relevance content. You probably don't want to look at Instagram because you might just see my kids. So,
then you're on LinkedIn, and we'll put
LinkedIn's a big one. Yeah, LinkedIn's the other one for me, where you'll see a bit of space there. So, look, love to connect with anyone. You know, building our network is primary to this, and certainly the work you do, which I love, around having a global connection with so many different people is really exciting. So,
which is the other place where you can connect as a Sports Geek Nation member.
Yeah,
you can. We'll have to be getting you on to do some of the AMA sessions, but you know, thank you for being part of the community. And you know, it's really good seeing, I guess, people being able to connect. Just overnight, Tim Baker from Adelaide United and Paul Rogers from AS Roma were DMing about the FFA Cup, and then AS Roma sent him a tweet and said congratulations.
Yeah, awesome.
And that's a cool kind of, like, you know, I just saw it coming through on my feed. But sort of making those connections with people to have those little digital successes, and it really, you know, really means a lot to the, you know, behind the scenes and the staff to be able to say, hey, look what we did. We connected with this, you know, big brand. And so, you know, whether we helped facilitate that, I'm not going to take the credit, but it's really awesome to see guys, it's really awesome to see guys like Tim and Paul being able to connect. And, you know, that's one of the byproducts, I think, of the community offers. So if you're part of the community already, reach out to Nick, ask him all the questions we discussed, motorsport, marketing campaigns, stuff around membership, obviously esports. Best of luck for the rest of the year, and 2019 we'll watch with interest.
Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity to chat.
New workshops on audience, content, distribution, valuation, and pitch following Sports Geek's Digital to Dollars process. Go to digitaltodollars.com.
Thanks again to Nick Ryan from Nissan Motorsport. As he said, you can send him a tweet, Nick Ryan O, Ryan O at the end. Send him a tweet, tell him that you listened, or connect with him and talk to him on Sports Geek Nation in the Slack. You'll be able to reach out to Nick to find out more about what we discussed around the development of the supercar brand and the changes and the stuff they're doing from a marketing point of view, and how things are changing, and potentially even talking to him about esports and some of the things. It's very similar to what the conversation with Craig Neeb when I discussed it with him from a NASCAR point of view. A few things to wrap up. Obviously, if you want to join Nick and other smart people who have joined in Sports Geek Nation, you can go to sportsgeeknation.com to sign up. There's a members area where we are now saving full transcripts of the AMAs. So they ask me anything. And so I've actually had a few people ask, what is an AMA? And so it's an opportunity for one of the members to put up their hand and say, look, I'll answer any question that's put up. So if you're in the Slack, simply go to the AMA channel. You can just click on the AMA hashtag when I post it. That will drive you into a channel. And you can join any channel. So, you know, if you've been in Slack for a while and haven't looked at what channels are available, please do so. Go and check it out. And then it's pretty much ask a question. Tag the guest. Recent guests being John McCauley, Jeff Chatterton. Liam is up from Basketball Australia this week. So, yeah, please check it out. We'd love to have you. Love to have you part of Sports Geek Nation. As always, one last thing, the Digital Dollars workshop. For those of you who work in AFL land, we're running that for the AFL on November 16. So if you have not booked in for that, please do so. I'd love to see some familiar faces there. Looking forward to talking to a bunch of different clubs and sort of going through the process of knowing your audience, knowing your content, knowing your distribution, knowing your valuation, and knowing your pitch. And as I've said previously, my goal is for digital to be the number one revenue driver for sports by 2030. So I hope you can come along for the ride. That's it for me for this week. As always, please reach out to my guest on this week's episode, Nick Ryan. And if you need anything from me, please get in touch. Sean@sportsgeekhq.com is my email. And more than happy to catch up and talk to podcast listeners. Until next episode, my name is Sean Callanan, and you've been listening to Sports Geek.
Join Sports Geek Nation, access to exclusive Slack and Facebook groups with regular Q&A sessions with Sean Callanan. Go to sportsgeeknation.com to join. Need help with your digital rate card? Not sure how to price your assets? Is there a disconnect between digital and commercial? That is where Sean works best, in digital divorce counselor mode. Book a time for a call with Sean to discuss the Sports Geek process. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/phone call.
Go to sportsgeekhq.com for more sports digital marketing resources.